I'll speak on gun control in a moment, but first, current events. Predictably, an aging Bernie Sanders has announced another run for president. If he were elected, he would be 79 years old when he began the presidency. This self-professed socialist tries to pretend that his socialism is different, but just a few years ago, he praised socialism in Venezuela. And before that, he championed Fidel Castro. Bernie hopes that voters will forget his fascination with Russia. He chose it for his honeymoon. Or that he traveled to Nicaragua at one time to advise Daniel Ortega on how to wage war on the United States. No doubt, Sanders will appeal to college snowflakes and those who want a free ride throughout life. Sanders promises free health care, free college, and many other free goodies from the government. We all know there is no such thing as a free goodie. This naive man has never held a real job, but he owns three homes. He tried living in a commune when he was younger, but was kicked out because he was too lazy to work. And before public office, he freeloaded on welfare. He lives a millionaire status today while protesting about income inequality. He speaks of the United States as a wealthy country while ignoring that it is some $23 trillion in debt, and that interest on that debt is unsustainable. Such is the life of fairy tale liberals. The Jussie Smollett case is a big deal, because it again highlights the hypocrisy of the Democratic left and their fake news allies. In late January, TV actor Jussie Smollett told Chicago police that two white men shouting pro-Trump slogans attacked him. He said they used racist language and anti-gay slurs while assaulting him around 2 a.m. in the morning as he was walking home from a fast food place. Smollett is black and gay. Among other things, he claimed that the assailants put a rope around his neck. Far fewer allegations have resulted in riots, burning, and looting. To make such a claim, if untrue, should result in severe punishment. Smollett has been a strident anti-Trump critic and is a far-left Democrat. He made this a hate crime by saying that the two assailants were white men, and he made it a political issue by tying the crime to Donald Trump and his supporters. The investigation by Chicago police and the FBI turned up only two figures on the street at the time of the alleged assault. Smollett told Robin Roberts of ABC that he was sure those two men were his attackers. In the meantime, several Democrats and Hollywood elitists went ballistic in the press about this racist attack on a gay black man. Senator Cory Booker and Kamala Harris called it a modern-day lynching. Harris condemned the white men that Smollett claimed were responsible, as did Kristen Gillibrand of New York and several other Democratic presidential hopefuls. Several Hollywood types added their condemnation. All were willing to jump to a conclusion before Smollett's claims were investigated. As a self-confessed Trump hater, Smollett had all the elements he needed to embarrass the president and his followers. A rope around the neck certainly fits the stereotype of acts committed during slavery, and surely must have been put there by white racists, right? But then the plot began to unravel. The two figures that Smollett said he was sure were his attackers were brothers and turned out to be black, not white. Both knew Smollett, and at least one had worked with him. These two men were questioned by Chicago police and admitted that Jussie Smollett had paid them to stage a bogus attack. Smollett, of course, denied it, but refused to give police access to his iPhone where the messages could prove whether Smollett was truthful or lying. His excuse for withholding his phone was that there are embarrassing photos and messages on it. Chicago police wanted to question him again, but Smollett hid behind his lawyers. Now, consider this. Chicago had freezing weather on the night of the alleged attack. It was one of its coldest nights. Street cameras showed no one on the street except the two brothers at 2 a.m. when Smollett says he was out to get a sandwich and headed back home. At 2 a.m., in bitter cold, the attackers just happened to have a rope to tie around Smollett's neck. After Smollett called the police, he kept that rope around his neck 45 minutes to add drama when the police arrived. This is serious business, but Smollett did not treat it seriously in dodging the Chicago police, who sought to question him. He was evasive in not turning over his iPhone to police. Jussie Smollett has been arrested now and charged with a felony for filing a false police report. Other federal charges should follow because Smollett reportedly used the mail to send a threatening letter to himself that appeared to come from a racist. When that did not get him the publicity he wanted, he reportedly followed up with the fake attack. If Smollett is guilty, as it appears he is on a mountain of evidence, he should be prosecuted to the fullest extent. As an example to others, black or white, that hate crimes do not go unpunished. This is as much of a hate crime as those committed by white supremacists, which draw condemnation from any right-thinking American. To take this less seriously because Jussie Smollett is black or because he is gay would be a travesty of justice. To downplay it, as many in the mainstream fake news media have done to protect a Trump-hating liberal, is unconscionable. The two brothers, who say Smollett hired them to stage this hoax, said that the actor was unhappy with the pay he was receiving from the TV series he appears on and thought this would garner sympathy for him and get him a raise in pay. The $3,500 check he paid the two brothers with has emerged. This stunt did initially garner sympathy for Smollett, as liberal Democrats and Hollywood elites followed the fake news media in jumping to the conclusion that Smollett was a victim, and that President Trump was at fault for causing his followers to do such a thing. The raise in Smollett's pay is another matter. He's been dropped from the TV series Empire, and his acting career will be over when the trial is over and he's found guilty. This was not the first time Smollett had lied to police, but it was the worst time. Years ago, Smollett was stopped on suspicion of drunk driving, and he lied to the officer by using his brother's name as his own. Hate crimes have no place in America, whether committed by whites or blacks. Jussie Smollett makes it harder for true victims to be believed, and his harebrained scheme to enrich himself could easily have resulted in riots, destruction, and looting. It has happened many times before with far less cause. If a white man committed such a hate-filled hoax by blaming two black men of attacking him, liberal Democrats and their media friends would demand a prison sentence. Amazingly, there are black racists in the public and racist personalities on media outlets like MSNBC and CNN who support Smollett and try to sway public opinion away from facts in the case. Moreover, they are trying to blame a red hat that reads, "Make America Great Again." They say that's a trigger for hate. But is the Star of David a trigger for hate? Is a Rastafarian hat a trigger for hate? Is Elizabeth Warren's war bonnet claim a trigger for hate? There's nothing wrong with making America great again, unless you're a socialist Democrat who cares more about political power than their country. Would we tolerate a Yankee fan assaulting a Red Sox fan because of his cap? Is it okay for a Carolina fan to assault the Duke mascot because he is triggered by the Duke Devil costume? Or a Duke fan to assault the Carolina Ram? This points again to the increasing insanity driving the left in this country. It is dangerous and can bring about nothing good. Another senseless mass shooting in Aurora, Illinois. And the cries from liberal Democrats ring out again to attack the Second Amendment. These people cannot rest until they disarm every American who possesses and uses a gun safely and relies on it for security and protection. Even as Democrats fight for open borders and easy access to this country, they simultaneously want to do away with the Second Amendment and strip Americans of their legal right to keep and bear arms for protection against the drug dealers, the MS-13 gang members, and terrorists already trying to enter the United States illegally, and who would welcome open borders. Now, why doesn't gun control work? If there are fewer guns on the street, the incidents of terrorism, mass shootings, and violent crimes decrease, right? Wrong. It will increase. Look at Chicago, Los Angeles, and New York City. Three cities with very strict gun laws in three states with strict gun laws. Yet, violent crime has not decreased there, and in some instances has actually increased. The strictest gun laws do not work, and they will never work. Why, you ask? Well, people will follow gun-free zone laws, except criminals. The criminal doesn't care about gun-free zone laws. Criminals make a living by breaking the law. With each new law usurping individual liberties, the criminal element thrives. Criminals actually want government to enact more gun laws. The criminal seeks opportunity where gun control laws run rampant. While it is true that a mass shooting or violent act can happen in a state with more conservative gun laws, the vast majority of them happen in states with ultra-strict gun laws. Colorado is a hotbed, a state with liberal gun laws. California sees incidents like San Bernardino even with strict gun laws. Illinois has one of the highest crime rates in the country. Why do many of these mass shootings occur in high schools or college campuses? Because no one is going to be armed in gun-free zones except the criminal. A concert shooting in Las Vegas? They had security checks for contraband before patrons entered. But criminals know that. In short, gun laws don't work because criminals, those going to go ahead with violent crime, don't observe any gun law. The harder we make it for law-abiding citizens to hold a gun, the easier it is for armed criminals to thrive on violent crime. We need to understand the nature of gun violence. The fake news media tends to put out stories that read like this. There was a mass shooting today in San Bernardino, California, where 14 people died, adding to the gun violence that will take the lives of 30,000 Americans this year. The association from the media is that there are 30,000 deaths in situations like San Bernardino, and that's simply not true. Over two-thirds of gun violence is suicide. Of the remaining third, over half is related to criminal enterprise, people with criminal records killing other people with criminal records over criminal stuff. As you just heard, even if we could snap our fingers and make every lawful gun go away, the United States would still have a homicide rate significantly higher than those other developed countries that the media goes on about. Unfortunately, mass shootings don't lend themselves to easy answers. Mass shootings tend to have the following features. They are performed by individuals with no serious criminal record. They are well planned. They occur in locations with a high number of potential victims. They occur at a time and a place chosen by the shooter. Those shooters generally have between 5 and 15 minutes before the arrival of law enforcement. If one compares that list to proposed laws to tighten gun control, it's easy to see the problem. Universal background checks. Mass shootings tend to be performed by individuals with no serious criminal record. Waiting periods. These shootings are well planned over time. Shooters are prepared to wait. David French of National Review shared research with me for today's commentary. The United States is facing a puzzling paradox. Even as gun crime has plunged precipitously from the terrible highs of the early 1990s, mass shootings have increased. Consider this. 15 of the 20 worst mass shootings in U.S. history have occurred since the Columbine school shooting in 1999. The five worst have occurred since 2007, and three of those five were in 2016 and 2017. It's horrifying, and government solutions are hard to find. The unique characteristics of mass shootings mean that they often escape the reach of public policy. The Washington Post's Glenn Kessler, hardly a NRA apologist, famously fact-checked Marco Rubio's assertion that new gun laws wouldn't have prevented any of those recent mass shootings, and he declared that what Marco said was true. Well, time and again, existing laws have failed, or no proposed new control law would have prevented the purchase. The reason? Obvious. Mass shootings are among the most premeditated of crimes, often planned months in advance. The shooter at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School in Florida reportedly wore a gas mask, carried smoke grenades, and set off the fire alarm so that students would pour out into the hallway. Each of those things points to careful preparation. A man who is determined to kill and who is proactive in finding the means to kill will find guns every time. He can modify guns and he can find ammo magazines. But that does not mean there's nothing we can do. When policies fail, people can and should rise to the occasion. Looking at the deadliest mass shooting since Columbine, we see that the warning signs were there time and again. People could have made a difference. Syed Farouk and Tashfeen Malik spent at least a year preparing for their attack in San Bernardino. Evidence shows that Farouk may have discussed the attack 3 years before the murders. A neighbor reportedly witnessed suspicious activity at the shooter's home, but was afraid to report what she saw. The story of Devin Patrick Kelly, the church shooter in Sutherland Springs, Texas, is full of warning signs, acts of aggression, and missed opportunities. He was violent. He should never have passed a background check, and he displays a fascination with mass murders. Adam Lanza's family struggled with him for years before he committed mass murder at Sandy Hook. His mother was overwhelmed by his behavior, and he lived in deep isolation, blocking anyone from entering his room and even covering his windows with black plastic bags. Sung-Wee Cho, the Virginia Tech killer, was known to be profoundly troubled. He stalked and threatened female schoolmates. In 2005, a court ruled that he was an imminent danger to others, but he was released for outpatient care. The FBI twice investigated Omar Mateen, the Orlando nightclub shooter, and he once claimed that he was affiliated with Al-Qaeda and Hezbollah. The list could go on and on. In fact, evidence of extended mental health problems, aberrant behavior, or political radicalization is common. In the absence of such events and evidence in the Las Vegas shooting, it renders it the mysterious black swan of mass killings. Each new shooting makes it easier for the next shooter to pick up his gun. Others have used the term contagion to describe the wave of copycat killers. Again, each killing inspires the next, and as the killings increase, so does that inspiration. So what does this mean? It means that Americans need to be aware that this contagion does exist, that this ever-evolving riot is underway. We cannot deflect responsibility upwards to Washington. We're still the first line of defense in our own communities. We cannot simply assume that the kid filling his social media feed with menacing pictures is just going through a phase, or that strange obsessions with murder or mass death are morbid but harmless. We've trained ourselves to mind our own business, to delegate interventions to professionals, and to judge not the action of others. But in a real way, we are our brother's keeper, and an ethic of see something, say something is vital for a community life. Instead, we all too often retreat into our own lives, either afraid that intervention carries risks or falsely comforted by the belief that surely everyone else will do the right thing. We've seen this dynamic in other crimes. The worst of the sexual predators revealed so far by the Me Too movement, Harvey Weinstein and Larry Nassar, could have been stopped so much earlier if the people around them had shown just an ounce more courage in the face of known complaints and known misconduct. We didn't need better laws to stop rape. We needed better people. One of the greatest challenges for any society is stopping a man who is determined to commit murder, and we will never fully succeed. Even the most vigilant community will still suffer at the hands of evil men. But it's days like these, when children lay dead in schools, that we have to remind ourselves that we are all in this together. We have responsibilities, not just to mourn and comfort the families of the lost, but to think carefully about our own communities and the circle of people in our lives, and to take action to guard our own children and our own schools. It is the duty of free people to be aware, to have courage, and to care for one another. It should be a reminder that we cannot consider a troubled person somebody else's problem. We can't assume that it won't happen in our school or in our town. That's not public policy. It's a personal responsibility. It's also the best way to confine the contagion that is killing our children. There are some 200,000 gun laws in the United States. Yet the cries for more gun laws grows louder. Enforcing laws already on the books would certainly help, but the sad truth is that there is no gun law that will stop a criminal mind from committing gun violence. To pretend otherwise is as foolish as it is dangerous. We can certainly do more to make sure that mentally challenged people cannot get a gun, but we can never completely stop it, because there are too many ways for a person to get a gun in America without going to a gun store. As for criminals, no gun law will ever stop them from getting weapons on the black market or stealing them. It is totally naive to pretend otherwise. For those liberal Democrats seeking to take away our right to have a weapon for protection, I say this. I have had a gun, at my disposal since I was 10 years old. All of my married life, I have kept a weapon to protect myself, my family, and anyone else placed in danger by mindless criminals. I will keep that weapon until the day I die. And after having access to a weapon for more than 6 decades, while causing no harm to anyone, I will join with other lawful gun owners to stand against any effort to repeal the Second Amendment. This is important business. My friends, I look forward to coming to you each week with my commentaries. I hope they cause you to think. That's what we need to do more of. We have many, many problems in our country. We have a House of Representatives that is taking it as their duty to impede the progress of the President of the United States. Nothing Donald Trump does can ever appease these people. Even before he says something or does something, because they've been tipped off about it, they come out against it. The House of Representatives under Nancy Pelosi is now putting forth a resolution to stop the president's wall against all odds. We see what's happening in other countries. We see what's happening in Venezuela now, and where they're trying to flee the country in order to go into Colombia. Colombia, of course, does not want a ton of people coming in and putting all kinds of strains on their resources. And so there is a battle at their border. Look for a wall to ultimately be built. There are walls in so many countries all across the country. LeBron James, the basketball player who has a really motor mouth, lives behind a very tall gate. House Leader Nancy Pelosi lives behind a very tall gate. Most of the people demanding that we don't put up a wall or a barrier to stop the influx of criminals coming across our border live behind tall walls. I know that everybody trying to come across the border is not a criminal. Most of them aren't. They are looking for a better life. But in order for them to come in here with those kind of numbers, their better life comes at our expense, your life. We can't take in all of the world's troubled people. We can't take everybody out of Venezuela because they tolerate a dictator who has brought the country to its knees. Venezuela was once the most prosperous country. Per capita, it was the most prosperous country. It had enormous resources, including oil. But they let the despots take control, and when they did, they raped the country of all the resources, took the money out to offshore accounts, and in the case of Hugo Chavez, who died earlier or would still be in charge, Maduro becomes the next Hugo Chavez. The United States, in its early going, had no tanks, no bombers, but when they felt oppressed by the British, they banded together. They didn't run to Mexico. They didn't go to Canada. They fought for their country. That's not happening overseas. That's not happening in Venezuela. There are many problems in our country, and we need to be aware of them. We need not completely despair. There's always hope. But we've got to make some major changes in this country. For one thing, we've got to demand that Democrats stop all of this foolish investigative nonsense. They wanted Mueller's report to come out. Well, Mueller is about ready to produce his report. So far, there is no evidence that he's going to be able to show any collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia. That's not going to stop the Democrats. Adam Schiff, Shifty Schiff, has already said he's going to launch another investigation on the same matter in the House of in Congress. If we sit idly by and allow our country to be stalled, to stop the progress we have going for us, it's our fault. We can blame nobody else.